At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Benjamin Karp of Brooklyn College and CUNY Graduate Center. His new book is The Great New York Fire of 1776, a lost story of the American Revolution. Nearly 250 years later, there's no resolution. All the testimony gathered at the time from inquiries, from investigation, from eyewitnesses, from stories told, an inquiry years later in Britain run officially by the Crown, still no resolution, because we're now talking about fire perhaps at 12 points, perhaps at 15, perhaps at 20. But there are people now rushing to answer the fire breaking out in empty houses or houses that have occupants. This got my attention immediately, Professor. I had to read it several times. Pumps and buckets are sabotage. Cutting of the bucket handle, breaking of the pump. How do we explain that unless there was someone with a design?
I mean, the only other explanation, well, two other explanations. One is that these eyewitnesses are lying or mistaken. And the other explanation was that you just had people being causing chaos and doing mischief for no motivation, but just because things were chaotic and they were doing this for random malevolent reasons. But no, I mean, the loyalists and British witnesses see firefighting equipment being deliberately tampered with, preventing the firefighters from doing their jobs as effectively as possible.
The Trinity Church and the St. Paul's Church, representing the Church of England, representing the Crown, that will become an important debating point for those who see this all as a design, because it was anti-church. There was one man, I believe his name is Boucher, forgive me, Professor, if I misremember, who testified afterwards or spoke afterwards that there were no meeting houses, that is, dissenter churches burning. But there was a great attention to Trinity Church, which burned, and St. Paul's, I believe, they prevented from burning.
Yes.
And from Whitehall Slip to Trinity Church is quite a reach up Broadway. That suggests, again, there was design. Is that how to read this?
Yes. Again, is it possible that what's called a flaming brand, right, like a wooden shingle on fire being blown by the wind that then smacked into the steeple of Trinity Church and made it catch fire? Could that have happened by accident? Possibly. But witnesses said that that Trinity Church caught fire way too fast after the fire at Whitehall Slip for this to have been possible. And it is worth saying that the British and many loyalists already had a kind of prejudice against the Americans. They thought that the Continental Army and the leading rebels were heavily affiliated with dissenting Protestant churches, Presbyterians and Congregationalists in particular. And they believed that the rebel cause already had animus against the Church of England and would have targeted Trinity Church deliberately for that reason.
At 2 a.m., General Robertson is alerted of the fire, and there are British sailors and British soldiers who are landed in order to help the firefighting. By 4 a.m., the report is the fire is burning with great violence. And, Professor, you provided a wonderful map, the East River to the North River, a.k.a. the Hudson River. And the whole of what we now call the West Side looks to have been damaged as the fire spread north, although there's fire reported in other parts of the city that would be east of Broad Street. Did they fight the fire in any particular region, a way that meant the worst burning was on the west side and it protected the east side? Was that firefighting that kept the east side safe?
Yeah, this is what General James Robertson says afterwards. He's, I believe, the ranking officer at the scene. He was the commandant of the city. He actually owned a mansion on Broadway himself because he had been living as Barrack Master General in New York City since the Seven Years' War. And he takes charge of firefighting, and he later says, I fought the fire and actually prevented it from going east, where it would have burned the more substantial wharf area, the commercial district, and the place where the Navy yards would have been, that he allowed his own house to burn rather than let the fire spread to the east, where it could have done much more damage to the city. So he claims that the fire was ready to consume the parts in the east, but that he sacrifices his own home in order to divert the fire up Broadway and to the west.
The wind is driving the fire. And yes. The report is 70 miles away in New Haven, they could see the fire.
Amazing to think about how little light pollution there was back then that you could see it at that distance.
Was there sabotage of the pumps? Now, I understand pumps can be broken, but the report of sabotage is more than once. Did they have evidence afterwards that the pumps were broken purposely?
This is so hard to determine, right? You find a broken pump handle on this delicate equipment. How are you supposed to know whether this happened through neglect, an accident, and just general deterioration, or whether it was something that was done deliberately? We do have some accounts of people either physically interfering with what firefighters were doing or actively breaking firefighting equipment.
They fight the fire all night, and my general understanding is that by sunup, they were getting control, although there's fire everywhere. There's been chaos. And the retaliation, was that during the nighttime, or did the retaliation start the next day? Is there any general understanding of when the lynching episodes took place, when the persecution took place?
Yeah, we don't know how many times this happened, but during the night, in the midst of the fire, the British do seem to have caught and killed a few people who they suspected of being incendiaries, either by stabbing them with bayonets, soldiers stabbing them with bayonets, or throwing people into burning buildings and immolating them on the spot. These were kinds of summary executions that happen in the midst of the chaos of the fire. And this is because the British soldiers on the ground suspected these people. They either caught them in the act of setting things on fire or caught them with incendiary materials in their hands, which made them look very, very suspicious.
There's one retaliation that is of great significance now and in future. It's the death of a man named Wright White. Who was he, Professor? And what happened to him?
We don't know a ton about Wright White, except that he was a carpenter, that he appeared to have had loyalist sympathies before the war, and that he had a problem with alcoholism. And we have numerous reports of what happened to him on the night of the fire, that a woman was trying to put out the fire with a bucket, and he either stopped her from doing it or maybe even cut her arm. And some British soldiers witnessed this, and they're so enraged that they bayonet him on the spot and then hang him up by his heels, which was a punishment reserved for really egregious crimes. And people later come around and say, wait a minute, this guy was a loyalist. Why would he have been setting the city on fire? And I think people point to it and say, look at how arbitrary and ill-informed the summary justice of these British soldiers were. Yes, they later claimed to have caught a bunch of arsonists on the spot, but look what they did to poor Wright White, who was probably guilty of nothing more than just having been deranged by the sight of the fire and his own struggles with alcohol. And so it when you tell that story, it makes the British soldiers look very arbitrary in the punishments that they dealt out.
Significant, the Wright White hanging is well on the east side towards the East River Slips where the British fleet is. It's well away from the conflagration, suggesting that this was irregular, even at the time it was irregular.
Yes, I mean, it's very unclear. It may be that they caught him closer to the fire and then hanged his body at the corner near where he was known to have lived. But another possibility is, yes, although it's mostly the west side that suffers the most damage, there were smaller fires and caches of combustible materials found elsewhere in the city. It's possible that they were able to put those other fires out and save the eastern and central parts of the city, and that the only reason we think of it as a west side fire is that that was where the fire became so big that they couldn't prevent it until the wind, they couldn't prevent damage until the wind shifted.
Professor Benjamin Karp, The Great New York Fire of 1776, A Lost Story of the American Revolution. Now the debate begins. Accident or design? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous US only.